Struggling to see up close? Make it visible with Viz. Viz is a once daily prescription eye drop to treat blurry near vision for up to 10 hours. The most common side effects that may be experienced while using Viz include eye irritation, temporary dim or dark vision, headaches, and eye redness. Talk to an eye doctor to learn if Viz is right for you. Learn more at Viz.com.
Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. Delighted to welcome back a veteran political strategist of McCain, Schwarzenegger, Romney, Jeb, and many others. He's a co-host of Hacks on Tap, co-director of the Center for Political Future at USC. He runs the American EV Jobs Alliance, and he's coming to us from a Quality Inn in Fresno or Bakersfield. It's Mike Murphy.
Well, don't tell him, Tim. I'm on the run from the Trump Peace Committee. It looked like a war crimes RICO case when I saw who he's lined up for that damn thing. But yeah, I'm moving quick here. I got enemies.
Are the blinds drawn there in that motel?
Oh, I am so far off the grid, there's no grid. But anyways, great to be on a fantastic podcast, and good to see you, pal.
Man, good to have you back. I just noticed this is by accident. We do this every 5 months. I went to look at our old Murphy interviews, and it's like 5 months ago, 10 months ago. So it's, you know, we have a little every, you know, almost half year, we have a little date. I guess I just kind of want to hear you cook in general on Trump's Davos performance, kind of the whole thing. I mean, we menaced Greenland and then backed down and got nothing. He's, I think, creating an alternate UN of only countries that are in the Russian sphere of influence.
It's unbelievable. It's strange Lovian, you know, no fighting in the war room. Now the board of peace. All right, you guys wash the blood off your hands and report to the photo op.
I was doing some research on some of the countries because I didn't know a whole lot. I was like, what's happening in Uzbekistan lately? And it seems like human rights violations is what's happening there and in most of the countries that are on the board of peace. But
this is a very old poll for your senior citizen tunes. But there used to be a fantastic political cartoonist named Jeff McNelly for the Chicago Trib. And in the Carter era, he did all these great UN cartoons. And he was kind of a conservative. And he'd draw the UN as this rogues gallery of guys with a frying pan on their head. And, you know, I mean, it was, and that's what came to mind when I saw these jokers. You know, the whole thing.
Did you see the Turkish minister that kind of looked like Hitler? That was behind.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think he shops at Bogino Menswear, which is a hot new Trumpian outlet for that kind of Hugo Boss, take over the Polish ghetto outfit. So the old record for astonished, cynical foreign leader watching a semi-idiot American president at international gathering was George Clemenceau, the Tiger of France, who said he wanted to be buried standing up facing Germany. Anyway, he sat there with a million casualties after World War I listening to Woodrow Wilson, 14 points of, you know, blah, blah. And he turned over to Lloyd George from Britain and said, you know, Jesus Christ only had 10. Well, that has now been surpassed by what I think all the foreign leaders were saying in a wonderful orchestra of different language, which is what the fuck? Because we now have the superpower that they rely on, the metronome beat of Western democracy run by a crackpot, egomaniac child. I'm sure they all had to go like take a double whiskey and get a dentist or a paranormal bit lip when they're just listening to this lunatic. But it's dangerous. Yeah. I was over there right after Trump first got elected in Europe, and a couple of, you know, big rich guys had hired Erskine Bowles and I to do a little presentation on what's what. And they say, don't you guys understand you're the orchestra conductor? And when you like take the baton and like, you know, stick it in your head, screws up the whole damn thing for all of us and the bad guys win. So yeah, we're living a nightmare right now. It's got a shot clock on it, but it's a nightmare.
It's the tiniest silver lining of the Board of Peace for me is that shot clock. It does seem like he is positioning himself to be you know, kind of head of the new world order after he leaves, which is nice. Like I want him to have an exit plan. I don't think this is great for the world, you know, because the charter of this thing has him having veto power over everything. But the fact that he seems to be eyeing a, you know, some kind of position for himself in his 80s, you know, kind of an honorarium, that's nice.
It'll be a Bond movie. They're having an island with guys with burp guns and orange jumpsuits driving around on golf carts underground, and he'll have a master plan. Yeah. You know, the other
better
thing
than
is
staying, I guess. Better than trying to stay.
Anything. Yeah. I said, let's steal in the old Al Franken Seniors in Space bit. Let's tell him we build a Death Star for him and just put him into space one way and, you know, figure it out later. The, you know, the whole thing is just so sick. I do think if you look beyond the cartoon optics of the Board of Peace, I mean, the big idea other than flatter Trump's ego and he can wear medals is now they own Gaza.
Yeah.
Who wants to own Gaza? What are we going to do? Put American boots on the ground in Gaza? It'll make Vietnam look like a Sunday school picnic. So on every level, it's not only just evil and egotistical and corrupt, it's relentlessly stupid. And that often is kind of the real log line on this Trump stuff. It's either greed or stupid greed.
What do you make of the Carney kind of speech about the rupture? And, you know, I think that's related to this kind of that there's a shot clock on it. But by the time the shot clock expires, I guess, are things going to be too far gone? Right? Do you think that there's a permanent reorientation, or do you think that's a little bit of bluster, or, you know, we muddle through and see what happens?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's going to be permanent damage, and the next president who might have read a book is going to have a lot to dig out of, but the Europeans are going to want them to dig out of it. We're key to their jam, so to speak. The problem is in the short term, if you're the Germans, you got two choices. Get close to the Chinese or the Russians, which is even worse, and meanwhile, quietly develop the capacity to have an atomic bomb, because that's the insurance policy and the world goes crazy.
Yeah.
And that's true of about 20 countries now. So there's going to be a lot of damage, but ultimately the Atlantic Alliance is just such a naturally beautiful and smart thing. I think it'll come back together, but it's going to have dents and dings. It's going to cost us. I mean, we'll be cleaning up Trump horseshit all over geopolitics, the economy, everywhere else, the, you know, some of the appointees all works for a while. That was an avoidable tragedy, but here we are. And of course, we have a gutless parliament of my beloved former party, the Republicans. You know, we don't ask these guys to land on Anzio Beach, just defend the Constitution. That appears to be way too much for them.
I hate this question to ask you because I get it every time I go anywhere. And it's like, you know, what more is there to say about these guys? But it is pretty striking that even, you know, the Dan Crenshaws, the Marco Rubios, the people that seem to have a genuine view about the value of American strength in the world and the value of, you know, democracy promotion and all that. Everybody is fully on board with this program. Yeah. And like, it's hard to like understand why. I maybe they just kind of, they've deluded themselves into thinking that like there aren't any real consequences of Trump's words. And I don't know. How do you explain it?
You know, I call it the No Better Caucus, and they deserve a special hot seat when we have the Home Improvement Commission hearings afterward. I mean, it is unbelievable. I mean, take Marco Rubio. I've known Marco a long time. I was one of his first donors when he ran in the primary for U.S. Senate. And can Marco watch this ICE stuff and not remember that his dad ran away from thugs like that with nothing to America to be free and broke his back as a bartender his whole life? Marco used to tell that story when he needed your vote. I wonder about the quiet moments if Marco even has any anymore when he remembers some of that. He used to be on the right side of it. So yeah, a huge puzzle to me too. I guess those cheap haircuts in the House barbershop were really excellent. I think there is going to be a little forward bump. And I will say my expectations now creep along the floor. But as we pass filing deadlines, I think there's going to be a little, I won't call it bravery potion, but you're going to see some of them when they're outside of a primary threat kind of scuttle off to the high grass a little and try to get a little distance from Trump, particularly in the House where they're looking at a massacre. But that's self-preservation just of another flavor, just like they're sucking up to Trump, most of them. Now, privately, they're all, you know, everybody's a patriot, but we're going to wait till the Americans come. Then we're going to hit the streets and get those Germans out of Paris. The Vichy Republican Party, unfortunately.
One more just thing on his performance over there. And some of this, right, is speculative, right? It's like, feels like there's going to be some damage when it comes to us, you know, alienating our allies. But there is also substantive things happening in which he has deviated from, you know, more traditional orthodoxy. Ukraine, for starters, right, where they're now going through this freezing winter, it's seeing real damage. Trump's back blaming Zelensky. And then in Iran, like for a minute, he was getting Lindsey Graham pilled a little bit, and he was saber rattling on Iran and saying he was going to go help the protesters. But then basically, it seems to me like the regime ended up telling Trump that they weren't going to execute anybody, executed people anyway, and Trump moved on to, you know, greenlit some remodeling.
Yeah, Trump chases headlines. You know, he thinks like whoever writes the wood for the New York Post. So, oh, the Iran thing is hot. I'll get into that story. And then somebody sends him a cable saying, you know, we're going to need some casinos and hotels. And he says, okay, just don't kill anybody on the news and we have a deal, my friend. There's never any real lasting strategy other than tariffs, the one thing he believes in, which of course is stupid and crazy. Yeah. Everything is transactional with him and it's all based on either ego or gain, you know, financial gain. So it's a constantly moving deal. It seems like the only big theme in foreign policy, and you did see some of this in Davos, is take cheap shots at our allies in Europe and suck up to our enemies in Russia. That seems to be the operating sense of gravity here, which really makes you wonder.
Did you notice his hand?
No.
It's not healthy.
He is not a healthy guy. I mean, that job ages
you. It was the left hand this time that was very bruised. You don't shake with your left hand. He's never a big handshaker anyway, right, so that story didn't really mesh with me. But every once in a while having a mysterious bruise. This happens as you get older, but that's a pretty big one on the hand. I don't know.
Yeah, there's stuff going on in all these medical reports that some hack who wants to be a congressman, oh, God, he's Superman. He ought to be in the Olympics, you know. Just, you know, on every level. It's so juvenile and transparent. Yet somehow this wonderful country at least temporarily bought into it, or at least enough hated Biden and Harris to decide, well, he's a clown and a bozo and fright rig orangutan, but he can run the economy. And of course, the big thing is, you know, as a political hack, is he's lost that franchise now, the thing that was propping him up. So that's why I think he's going to try more foreign policy stuff to wag the dog, though, because otherwise we're talking about what the grocery bill looks like every week.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
Folks knew the Colonel approved of his new honey chili crisp and jalapeno ranch sauces the moment he tasted them and said, that's right. No notes. Just absolute silence. Turns out some flavors don't need explaining. They just need dipping. It's saucy season at KFC with new honey chili crisp and jalapeno ranch. Get dipping with a boneless bucket today.
Prices and participation vary.
That takes us to the New York Times Siena poll, I think, was pretty telling on that from earlier this week. And basically, the short of it is he snapped back to his original coalition, right? Like that his numbers now, according to this poll, in every demographic group are basically indistinguishable from where they were right before he lost to Biden.
Yeah.
By 4 points. All these new folks that came on board, young voters who are unhappy about, you know, their economic prospects, Black and Hispanic men for the most part, they have now snapped back. And to me, I look at that and think, well, you know, for one, this is largely economy, maybe a little bit of the immigration stuff. But for two, you know, we spend a lot of time analyzing what happened in the 2024 election, when it's like, basically what happened is that there was a group of people that thought Biden was a mummy and that they didn't like the grocery store bill. And like, that was basically it. Like all of the other stuff is just kind of window dressing. And now that like Biden's out of the picture, and now that the economy isn't getting any better, those new people who came to Trump have basically snapped back.
I totally agree. You know, the media tends to, whoever wins the presidency, it's like, oh, an affirmation. No, they just wanted to fire Kamala because they're trying to get at Biden. So it's not like it was a big love-in for Donald Trump. And now the other problem I think Trump has is if you look at Trump as a totally performance reality show president, which, you know, I always get in trouble with my wife, Tiffany, but I'm like, you know, Andy Cohen has some explaining to do because he invented this category. And we wound up with a crackpot president, you know, cheap conflict.
Oh, wow. Andy Cohen catching some strays now. Watch
yeah,
I'm going to
get you some angry email. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But no, the whole cheap conflict world of reality TV, that's what he came from. But now it's old. We're doing Hangover 4 now. We have seen the movie, and we're seeing the second Trump economic failure, like when we fired him last time for Joe Biden. And, of course, Trump is like haunted by the ghost of Biden. This is the funny thing. Biden really got in trouble by telling everybody, you're wrong. The economy's great. Turkeys are at the 28th lowest price since the Civil War. You know, and people said, you're out of your mind. I was at Walmart yesterday. I tried to get a new truck. They want $890 a month. I'm paying $399 now. What the hell? So Trump's doing the same thing. He's jawboning that you're all idiots. The economy's great. And I just invaded Venezuela to grab some oil. And, you know, we've never made more money with tariffs. How are those layoffs in Ohio going at GM? He's telling them what they know is wrong. And in politics, that is the grease pig way to go over the cliff. And exactly what Biden did. And the same iceberg, I think, is going to really hurt him.
There's a different point of view coming from the vice president. I don't know, he gave a speech at Toledo yesterday talking about how things are going on in the economy. Let's listen.
This is something I want you to hear. The Democrats talk a lot about the affordability crisis in the United States of America. And yes, there is an affordability crisis, one created by Joe Biden's policies. You don't turn the Titanic around overnight. It takes time to fix what was broken.
It used to be a speech.
Now, what was that metaphor? You don't turn it around, or you don't raise it from the bottom.
You don't turn the Titanic around overnight. That's a brain teaser, that metaphor. Yeah. I think his speech writers hate him, or he's maybe not hiring from the cream of the crop. Yeah. In that department.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's going with a volunteer team, which is trouble. He ought to hire some pros. You know, I can't hear him and not have my head explode, because the first time I heard that voice was when our pal Crystal gave him my cell phone number, and he called me in 2016 about running for Senate in Ohio as an anti-Trump Republican. Mm. And then I told him it would be tough, but he ought to try. You know, it's a primary, be uphill, but it's a worthy cause. And I think after that conversation, he took a right turn at Faustville and made his deal. And here he is. And you know how I think it'll end? I think Trump's going to screw him, because they're going to have rough midterms. They're going to lose the House. Senate's going to get closer in a bad way for the Trump guys. And then the great punditry machine, which we know well, will start to say, even the MAGA world, the Joe Rogan, which is now a little estranged, another problem for Trump, will be like, well, we got Vance. He's the next guy. Trump screwed it up. What about this Vance? Well, he could be the real future. Yeah. It's going to drive him nuts. It's like the old Russian army joke that during World War II, two Russian generals are walking down the hall, and Igor says to Dmitry, Dmitry, you look terrified. What's wrong? Well, Igor, I got a big battle tomorrow, and if I lose, Stalin's going to shoot me. And Dmitry says, well, look at it this way. If you win the battle, he'll shoot your family and you. No other heroes in the Soviet Union. Yeah. So good luck, Vance. I predict he will not be the Republican nominee.
So it's Bill Kristol and Andy Cohen's fault where we're at. I'm open to all theories.
Well, I don't blame Kristol on that. I blame him for many other things. You know, we all
gave you JD's number. I suffered through. People can listen to this at Bulwark Takes if they want a deeper dive. He went to Minnesota after that Toledo speech with the nonsensical Titanic metaphors. He went to Minnesota and had a press conference where he played the role of like a stern school vice principal or vice dean.
Right.
And there's like a student group that is trying to kind of organize, you know, something nice on campus. And he's lecturing them about how they've
got. This is going to go on your permanent record.
They've got to follow. Yeah, you've got to follow the rules, young lady. Yeah, and she's just like, I just wanted to do have a gardening class here at school.
Well, it's Footloose and he's the town elder. Yeah,
you don't know how much that's going to cost. Right, okay. Right, exactly. Anyway, he was lecturing the people of Minnesota, you know, with a series of lies. He talked about how racial profiling isn't happening. They are getting warrants to go in people's houses. Renee Good did ram the officer with her car, and they had no choice but to seize the 5-year-old child and send her to San Antonio because their other option was to leave him out in the cold. And that was JD's pitch.
Right. So they sent him to the detention paradise there.
Yeah, that was his pitch in Minnesota. And it's just so unappealing. I do think probably some MAGA folks like the fact that he's so unappealing to us, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's maybe the appeal. Like they don't actually like him, but it's like he's really pissing off Murphy.
Yeah, right.
You know, right. He really grinds their gears, and so he must be one of us. I just do think that only gets you so far.
Yeah, he's got that angry shoe salesman thing. You know, yeah. I've been screwed my whole life, and now that we have a Reich, I'm going to get them. You know who they are. Right now, if there were a primary, he'd be the Republican nominee, and then there's going to be a big drive in the party for something new and fresh. And I'm not sure he'll be that by then. Now, it won't be a rejection of Trumpism. There'll be flavors of what's next that all have some populist stink to it. Most people say, you're nuts, Murphy. If the election held tomorrow, I go, yeah, it's not held tomorrow. And I think the midterms are going to be a huge, shaky event for the party. And then you wonder about 27. How will Donald Trump, aging, bruised up, take failure? Superman can't fly anymore. He just got his ass kicked by the country. Now what? In 27, he can't dictate the budget. He's got 40 investigations. The key is the Democrats not get stupid and keep trying to impeach him. And, they've got to be clever with their new power. But 27 is going to be a long year for the Donald. And how he behaves, which is also a little scary, next thing you know, we got to seize Manitoba. It's going to be part of the equation that drives the discussion for who the Republican nominee is in the first quarter of 2028.
Yeah, you can't tell me he likes listening to JD.
Oh, God, he's got to hate him.
Yeah, he hates a scold. I guess in this case, JD is scolding other people and sucking up to him, and that's kind of his survival mechanism. But, there's no room for any departure.
Right.
Like JD has no choice but to go on board with everything, because as soon as he uses his tone to be like, well, Donald was, thinking about this.
Right. And Trump has to lay off the failure on somebody. It can't be him in the midterm. So yeah, JD really screwed things up. I may forgive him.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
There was another country review on the economy from one other guy at Davos that got my blood boiling. So we'll get you going here. Hopefully this doesn't cost you any clients, Mike.
Good.
But Ken Griffin of Citadel. This is important because he's a big Nikki Haley supporter. He's a conservative guy, huge donor, but not really a Trump guy. Kind of been in and out of Trump.
Right. He was a regular, but willing to, have a reasonable discussion with the bad guys.
Yeah, sure. And he was at this kind of panel at the World Economic Forum, and he gave his rationale for why he thinks Trump is good, actually. So let's listen.
You cannot imagine how painful it was each and every day under the Biden administration to look at what new crazy proposal was being put into place to solve a problem that didn't even exist. I mean, our constant friction at Citadel with the government across umpteen different aspects of our business was exhausting. And to have that literally end on one day, Election Day, just gives you so much energy as an entrepreneur to go back and build your damn business. So the biggest sea change I've seen across American executives has been just like the giant sigh of relief. I can now go and focus on building my business.
You talk to more rich guys than I do. Like, is that real? I heard that and I was like, I have to play this because it's like, I would think the opposite, but maybe I'm wrong because I don't know. I'm open to, getting government off the back of industry.
You're a capitalist.
That's my instinct. Okay. But Trump is doing that. What about the new crazy policy every day? It sounds like he's describing Trump.
Well, I do hear that, not from everybody, but I do hear it. And what it comes from is the Biden administration did overregulate, and there are a lot of problems. You hear it from our, Repub friends. They start there. Well, here's how bad it was over Biden. So that makes it okay. And then they take the huge leap And it's all short-termism. Well, the regulations are pulled. We're minting money. Yeah, but we don't have NATO anymore. Putin's and the Chinese are running the table. And all this long-term stuff that's going to be really bad and really expensive. They're like, yeah, but this quarter I'm minting money. You know, it's a very short-termism thing. Trump has snapped the leash off and let the dogs run. And we like running. But the categorical cost of Trump, you know, little stuff like democracy, is like, well, that's, you know, that's not my quarterly earnings. I'll get to that later. Look at the stock market. Yeah. Look at the national debt. Yeah. You know, look at this AI bubble. We'll see how that turns out for people who want to pay 200 times earnings for a stock.
Look at the price of gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gold's doing better than the market, actually, over the past year.
I'm for the dogs running on a long leash, not no leash at all. But the dogs like no leash at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the short term, yeah, they're going to make a lot more money, which is good for the country. I believe in growth. But they don't understand that a lot of this stuff can have a catastrophic cost. And they're doing short-term steroid accounting here.
I just think that there is such an, you know, kind of imbalance and the double standard on some of this stuff, too. And I don't really understand how to get out of it. But like Trump has taken a stake in 11 businesses, I think. The government now is taking a stake in 11 businesses. All the tariffs.
McGovern didn't pitch that. Nobody has. You know, this guy is Juan Perón. He's got fascist tendencies, but he's kind of a socialist at heart economically. He can't deficit spend enough, you know, if it buys him popularity. And he likes grabbing assets, you know, he's shaking down companies.
And he likes bullying people with the tariffs. And I always use the example of like the Tim Cook, like this idea that, oh, you know, business owners, entrepreneurs now didn't have to worry about the government and they're unleashed and they can just run. It's like, well, maybe in some industries, but like in others, you know, imagine if President Harris had forced Tim Cook to come to the Oval Office and said, I'm going to squeeze you. You're going to get a bonus tax on you from the government unless you give me a trophy that was made by, you know, an indigenous supporter of mine who thinks that I'm the greatest person ever.
Right.
And then you tell me how great I am. And then I might give you a reprieve from this extra tax on your business. The Ken Griffins of the world would be, you know, moving to Uruguay.
Yeah, totally.
And they would be like, this is communism.
In his heart, Trump is a lefty UK Labour Party guy in the 70s. I'm going to nationalize it. I'm going to tariff it. And I'm going to control everything. He is a government control guy. I remember, you know, when I was at the Georgetown College Republicans and, you know, during the Hoover administration, during the 1980s, early 80s, we would go get arrested in front of the Soviet embassy, you know, because of Afghanistan and what they were doing. We were against huge government control. So that's why the corruption of the party just stuns me. But yeah, he's not a conservative. He's a populist yo-yo and a thug and a power nut and a crazy person. So other than that, we're doing great.
The psychology of Trump I got. It's the psychology of the business guys that is harder to get, you know, because I'm like, okay, it's one thing to say, okay, you know, look, Biden did some bad stuff. You know, we're not doing the antitrust on Spirit Airlines or whatever. I get it. Like Biden did some stupid stuff. Yeah. But the jump to we have to talk about how great things are now and ignoring all of the business risks. I don't know. Just to me, it feels so short-sighted.
Yeah. You know, I hear it in the auto industry because I'm, you know, from Detroit and I care a lot about whether or not we still have an auto industry because Chinese are coming fast. And, you know, they say, well, in 10 years, the Chinese are going to wipe us out. But in the next 3 years, and then I'm going to retire. Trump took away the CARB standards. He's killing us on EVs. He's handing the world market to China. That's bad. But, you know, in the short term, I'm going to hit my bonus because, you know, without the CARB standards, we can sell more profitable trucks. So it's this short term sugar calorie, you know, mentality, because a lot of the American business incentives are very short term. And okay, but long term, I think it would be nice to have an auto industry in 15 to 20 years.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a reason.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more.
Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Trump was at the auto show.
They had reviews. He went to the Detroit Economic Club, and then he said, you know, I'm going to let the Chinese come here and you know, build some plants. And about 17 auto vice presidents immediately had heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah.
And of course, the Canadians have responded to his bullying by letting Chinese-made EVs into Canada. So yeah, he's no friend of American manufacturing, and the tariffs are not that good. The most beautiful thing in production is the North American integrated auto chain, Canada, U.S., Mexico, and he's done everything he can to screw that up. So,
what is even the case for him in the auto place? Like, I guess he's taken away some of the mandates on, you know, electric.
Yeah, it's the CARB stuff. The government now can't tell you what your average miles have to be, which forces you to make smaller, lighter vehicles. Of course, Americans don't want to buy because everybody wants their fantastic large pickup truck.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have any kind of mileage standard, the idea was, one, air pollution; two, dependence on oil, less of a problem now. We're fracking, we got a lot more oil. And three, it'll move people to electric vehicles, which is where the world is going, and our companies need scale. The U.S. is only 10% of the world auto market. So it was the stick and the incentives were the carrot. Trump's ripped all that away. So short term, it's a bit of a boost. Well, the tariffs have cost billions. So on one hand, he's giving them steroids. On the other hand, he's sawing their arm off. You know, again, this is toddler with the chainsaw economics. But if we don't compete in EVs, which were 25% of world auto sales last year, we're British Leyland.
And it might be too late already. And the Chinese EVs are just way better.
I don't know about way better, but they're very good. The Germans got destroyed in the Chinese market. So some of their new stuff coming out next year is really good. And this new Ford $30,000 small SUV and pickup truck is going to be tremendous. That we're catching up pretty quick, but we need our home market to support us. Well, the Chinese don't care about making any money. They've got 100 brands of car. They make gas cars too, as many as they do EVs, more actually.
Yeah, right.
None of them make money. So the Chinese thing is political. By exporting a lot of cheap cars, we take over foreign markets and we deindustrialize our competitors. Right before World War II started, the Brits made 500,000 light vehicles. The French made about 360,000. The Germans about 420,000. The year before Pearl Harbor, we made 4.7 million vehicles, which is why every locomotive, most trucks, tanks, aircraft engines in World War II for the Russians, for British Empire, had Made in USA on them. Today, the Chinese would, if we have a drone manufacturing contest, we're not going to win. Yeah. So industrial power is important politically, and the Chinese know that. So if you're an auto exec, you got to go compete in the Mexican market, where in 5 years, the Chinese have gone from importing 500 cars to 400,000. And you got to lose 10 grand a car competing with the Chinese government, subsidizing their guys to wipe you out. We need a little government help in the short term. I hate subsidies. I don't like any of the protectionism, any of this. But short term, it's a political fight.
You could imagine a good Trump doing this.
Yeah.
You could imagine a good right-wing nationalist do this. Right? This is the other thing. It's like he is offering us the stupidest imaginable version of right-wing nationalism, right? Like a smart person with kind of a Trumpian worldview, maybe a Boris Johnson type in America, right? Like would go to Canada, Mexico, Europe, Australia, and be like, let's team up here, right? Like let's keep the Chinese vehicles out of the market. Let's, you know, industrialize ourselves. Right. We'll subsidize it. We'll trade with each other. You know, we'll do some of the production in Mexico where it's cheaper, whatever, right? Like in order to compete against China on this. And we're doing the opposite.
Yeah. And we did some incentives to move people in our lucrative home market to EVs. Until a couple of years ago, GM sold more cars outside of America than the US. And Ford sells a big hunk outside. And so you got to be a world competitor to have the scale, which is the key to the auto business. So anyway, Trump is no friend of many of the people he says he's friends of, like the average auto worker, union or non-union.
Before we move on, I just wanted to circle back on the equity stakes just to make sure I had this right. Yeah, the U.S. government does have equity stake in now 11 companies since mid-2025. Prior to Trump, the U.S. hadn't taken a non-crisis investment in a private company since the 1950s. Now we have 11.
Yep.
U.S. Steel, semiconductors, minerals,
yeah, there you
energy.
Go.
and I think one of those companies, Trump's blog has a share of now. You know, so it's kind of like a blog slash cryptocurrency slash nuclear fusion company. It's interesting.
Trump went public once in his casino empire and pumped the stock to the 90s, and then it crashed to, I think, a dollar or maybe 75 cents, wiped his investors totally out. So, you know, he's not not the wizard I'd want in charge of this. And, of course, the principle is horrible. So other than that.
I want to go back to the Minnesota stuff really quick. The House passed through the DHS budget. Looks like we're not going to have a spending fight over this because there were seven Democrats that voted on this. I've been a Marie Glusenkamp Perez fangirls on this pod.
She's great.
So I do love her. Bad vote. She was one of the seven that went with DHS. My opinion, bad vote. I'm curious what you think. They decided to not.
Bad vote. I agree.
It goes to the Senate. You know, who knows what kind of wrangling they could do. Maybe, you know, you could have individual senators try to gum up the works. What do you think the Democratic kind of angle should be on dealing with, you know, ICE broadly and what we're seeing in Minneapolis?
They ought to keep shouting. You know, it's interesting. There's a guy running for governor of New Mexico. I think it's Berglund in the Democratic primary. And I did a CNN hit with my pal Alex Michelson the other night, and he was on too. And he's kind of a meat and potatoes prosecutor, kind of regular Democrat type. And he announced on the air, he said, look, they scoop up any American citizens in my jurisdiction. I'm going to have local cops put handcuffs on them. You know, we're going to lock them up. It's illegal. So come on down and try it in New Mexico.
I asked Mayor Fry about this on the podcast a week ago.
Yeah.
He basically said, I'm leaving the door open to that. We want to do it, but it's such a crisis situation there that there's so many guys with guns. It's like, I don't know if we want to escalate in this moment.
I'm for pulling guns. I'm for settling this.
Really?
I mean, you know, that's a pretty extreme, but they're scooping up American citizens like the Gestapo. So yeah, we have a Minnesota State
You're
Patrol.
For Wild West. New Mexico would be a good place for that.
Yeah, I'm not for a gunfight, but I'm for maxing out municipal and state of Minnesota power to stop this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not shy about American Gestapo's out of control.
The degree to which they all lie about it. I mean, look, politicians always lie. Yeah. And there's, you know, various ways that you dissemble or you kind of paint a picture a little bit better than it actually is. But, you know, my colleague Andrew Egger wrote about this story this morning. I don't know if you saw that, the kind of elderly Hmong man. They stormed his house.
They pull him out in his underwear. Yeah.
Yeah. They frog march him out in his underwear.
Yeah.
Guns drawn. He has his 5-year-old grandson is like what got woken up from the nap by, you know, guys in masks with guns. He's a citizen. He's a naturalized citizen. They take him out in the cold in his underwear, you know, rough him up and then send him back to the house a couple hours later. Government comes out and says, well, there were two other criminals, like sex pedos in the house, you know, and so and we got the wrong guy. They're like, these two criminals are still at large. They published their picture. Okay. Well, my colleague Andrew Egger looked into this. One of those guys has been in jail since 2024. And so we asked DHS about this. And DHS is like, well, if the Minnesota local officials would have worked with us, we would have known that. And it's like, we called the corrections department in Minnesota. They're like, no, we're working with them all the time. You know, all those guys that they're saying they're getting the worst of the worst.
Lie.
It's
they
mostly
lie.
People we transferred to them from prisons. It's not the random people they're harassing on the streets. And so it's just like lie after lie after lie after they menace citizens.
Yeah, because when it's lie with the badges and the seal, people want to believe it. So in the future, they won't. Undercuts law enforcement. You know, it's funny. Just one ICE thing here in Los Angeles. My wife's car got boosted last weekend, and we went through all the drama Saturday morning. And anyway, it was dumped, stripped, and chopped in South Central. So we get a call from the cops who finally, you got to come down here and see if you can get it to move. So we go down there, and she's chatting up with two, you know, LAPD kind of grizzled veteran cops in a panda car. She just says, you guys worry about ICE? And one of them said, oh, they don't have the guts to come down here. it was great, kind of defiant. And these were kind of authentic South LA guys who were cops. And they're just like, let them try. I've become pretty militant about this. We got a crackpot president. And he's trying to build a Praetorian Guard, federal thugs. And it's time for states to step up and local authorities. Let's have a couple of state police bearcats.
It's in line with, I think, our past, Murphy. I always was in the spirit of the Gadsden flag resonated with me. I was a don't tread on me person. I wasn't like a flag waver, but you know, I sort of found myself as a, you know, kind of aligned with the spirit of the cause. And it's like, it's amazing how many of the don't tread on me flag waivers have like, you know, kind of crossed out the don't and replaced it with like tread on me, comma daddy in this situation. And I don't really, I don't get it. Like it is against the spirit.
Remember what we used to call the cause. We didn't like big government. National ID card, hell no. The government was the problem. You know, the Leviathan, the road to serfdom. We had ideas. It was a reason. I spent 30 years of my life in shitty hotels like this one in the middle of nowhere to elect some meat puppet to the Congress or U.S. Senate to stand up for those principles. So, yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I thought we actually believed in something.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Speaking of meat puppets, he's better than that. Your governor, Gavin. Last time you were on, you talked about how you had a meeting with him.
Yeah.
When you last time, he was first kind of road testing the dark woke Gavin strategy of trolling Trump. That has continued. When it started, I was going like, is this going to be a week-long thing, a little thing? But like, he's kept the pedal to the metal on this. Obviously, huge success in the redistricting effort. He's in Davos this week. I played it for Pluff earlier in the week, how he's talking about how these world leaders need to get some knee pads out for the way that they're treating Trump. So he's continuing the strategy. I'm wondering what you make of it.
Well, I believe that strategy in the short term, the preseason, has helped him win the preseason. But there's no award for that. It just puts you on deck for the real show.
Yeah.
So, my opinion, I've said this a lot with Axelrod on Hacks on Tap. The governor I met about electric vehicles, he's for them because he understands that half the labs that are going to slow China down are in California. But on this performative stuff he's doing, that's going to work great for him as the number one Trump slapper among base Democrat voters through the midterms. And then it'll get very old very fast when everybody will do it. J.D. Pritzker will be doing pro wrestling interviews. I want to get Trump in the steel cage right here in Chicago, and it'll be very generic and it'll be very tired.
See, I'm not tired of it yet. That sounds good right now. In the preseason, he should invite him.
No. In the preseason, he's showing that Donald Trump, and they got a Twitter squad full of people. I want like a Pritzker Trump,
like Musk. Remember when Musk and Zuckerberg were talking about doing an MMA fight together? I kind of
right.
Want
no, it's all that kind of stuff. But Pritzker ultimately will be the best at, an air-conditioned Cobo Hall. I'm going to get that bum in here. He's no good for, the old Dick the Bruiser routine from Detroit. But the problem is that makes you interesting for now. Good. But leverage that into the future, which is what 27 will really be about, which in 27 drives the early primaries. People think it's 28. It's really 27. So you got to be the forward ideas guy. You got to have a vision for the middle class in America. That Trump is going to wither a lot. So it's not a bad opening act for Gavin. My advice to him would be a little of that goes a long way. Having a 24-hour, snappy arch Twitter feed is fun for a while. But again, it's kind of like, being a fire baton juggler. Yeah, you can be an opening act, but it's not going to go farther. You need the real thing, and he's got to do that. And he doesn't want a referendum in California.
Yeah, the fire baton juggler doesn't become Harry Styles. You don't become the front
right,
man.
Right, it just gets you into the variety show, but then you got to take it from there.
Yeah. On the California record, let's just, because there's an Atlantic piece about this week. Jonathan Chait was on it, and he talked about how his record is a problem. Part of me is like, does that even matter now? Did Trump's record matter? Not really. We're in a different world. On the other hand, I was reading some of the things that he listed, and I just want to share a couple of them with you. California spent billions offering Medicaid to undocumented immigrants, millions more on providing transgender surgeries for prisoners, some of them on death row. death row transgender surgeries is an interesting one.
The state got a very cut rate deal on bad doctors for that, though. It's like the old Dennis Miller joke, be a pathologist, surgery on dead people. What can go wrong?
Also, the highest state excise tax in the country on gas. And then there's this one. In 2021, he signed a bill mandating an ethnic studies course about power identity and social justice for all high school students. The model curriculum in its first draft taught cis heteropatriarchy and herkstery, HXRstery, and likened capitalism to white supremacy. Newsom quietly defunded that program last year. Does that stuff matter?
Yeah. California's a little different. It's a brand. People outside California, they're either say, oh, it's left-wing crazy, Governor Moonbeam, and this has been around forever, and all that stuff feeds that narrative. On the other hand, sure, people think California is often the future, where the future is invented. It used to be the golden state people wanted to go to. So the trick for Gavin will be, can he make the debate about some of the great stuff that happens in California? It's the biggest wealth creating machine as a state than anything in America. I mean, it's a lot of what happens first that's good happens there too. Can he make it? He's the future guy with the vision, or is he going to be in a batting cage defending all this crazy left-wing stuff? If he's that guy, he loses. So, you know, that's why he's right. Eventually got to pivot from na-na-na-na-na at Trump into, you know, I've said publicly, his line ought to be, everything happens first in California for good or bad, and we make all the big mistakes there first, but we learn from them so we don't repeat them, and try to turn it into a lesson learned experience. Now, everything's great. I dare you to deny that. And then we're going to be talking about some of this stuff, and that'll be bad for him.
I just think as a general thing, anytime you're kind of writing down a new word and creating a new word, if it begins with five consonants, it better be Polish.
Yeah, you're
going to be Polish. Because otherwise, it's like Herkstery. Yeah. If you can't say it, I don't think it's going to stick.
Arthur Finkelstein, the late great pollster, had a wonderful joke. Most people think an Afghan is a cat. If they went to college, they'll say it's a blanket. So, yeah, you don't really need 28 consonants, not the language of the election.
Give us your type five on the wealth tax debate.
There's a breakaway SEIU union of healthcare workers in San Francisco. So this is not the whole SEIU talking.
Yeah.
Run by kind of a charismatic rogue guy who's like, damn it, I'm putting this on the ballot. Every billionaire has to give 5% one time of all their assets. So let's say you own the New York Yankees. So on paper, you're now worth $14 billion, but it's not liquid. But here's the good news. You owe us $70 billion cash next Thursday. So we just did a poll on
$70 million. I'm not a math major.
Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah, it's early here. Okay. We just did a poll, and we were the first poll to test the actual ballot language, which came out the day after Christmas. They're getting signatures. It may not be on the ballot. Newsom opposes it. A lot of the Pauls oppose it. The teachers union opposes it. But this guy is like, double the budget for, wait for it, healthcare workers, my union, or I'm going to put this on.
Yeah.
So a couple of billionaires called up and said, you know, what do you think? I said, let me poll the title and summary. And then they said, well, that's a lot of money for a poll. And I said, you can afford it. So We did, and we released the data, and you can find it. Just Google a bunch of stories. It showed that yes vote at 48. And we asked people, do you like billionaires? Not really. Should billionaires pay more taxes? Absolutely. Well, what do you think about this tax? I hate it because we're never collect a dime. They're going to move. And we asked people, if you had $1 billion, would you stay and pay $50 million or would you leave? I'd leave. Yeah. So they think they're going to leave. They think they're going to tie it up in court forever, maybe going to the Trump Supreme Court. And the state will never see a dime. But when they leave, it'll cost jobs and it'll screw up the income taxes, where the 1% pays half of all state income taxes in California. We have a high state income tax rate at the top, 10% plus. So yeah, that will be big budget cuts. So this thing is badly written. And I think if it makes it to the ballot, which is an if,
yeah,
I think it's eminently beatable. And I hope to be part of beating it, frankly. I think it's horrible policy.
One of the things that, you know, during my immigration away from the Republican Party, one of the things that I've changed my views on is taxation of the top 1%. And it's not anything to do with Trump. It's because I spent an inordinate amount of time in 2016 meeting rich people, asking them for money anti-Trump effort.
Right.
And I was like, wait a minute, not all of you are up by your bootstraps after all. And so my populist California proposal is I want to come after the RSUs. You know, mm-hmm. I want the guy that was the fourth employee, you know, at the AI company, who, you know, did a nice job, fine, is doing quite well, but then he gets to sell his RSUs and, you know, makes $80 million off of it. I don't know if we need the capital gains rate on that. I think that we could take a little bit more from those folks. So, you know, I think that there's ways to do populist stuff. This just feels like kind of a dumb way to do it.
Yeah, no. There is way to get more revenue. And, you know, what's amazing is a couple of billionaires have said to me, you know, I'll pay more. I wish I had a government where I'd get more for it in the state. But yeah, you know, but if you assets, you're going to force me out of the state and I'm going to close my thing, et cetera, et cetera. Now, as far as you and this left-wing communism you're preaching here on high taxes. Yeah. See, there's still a Republican in me. We're going to hook you up with a Joe Rogan's agent. We're going to soak Crystal to give you a bigger piece of this huge podcast home run you've hit. And I'll see you at the Bentley dealership next year, my friend.
I am happy to pay income. If we get the Barry Weiss deal on the Bulwark, happy to pay taxes at ordinary income. I don't need the capital gains rates for the sales.
Fair enough.
but I hear you, though. Mm-hmm. You know, my life's good, all right? It's why I'm never going to be a billionaire. You know, somebody that has my point of view is never going to be a billionaire.
Well, let me tell you about crypto.
I'm happy, all right? Yeah. I've got a great life. I don't need a plane.
We have the new Trump Liberty coins here on crypto, so we're talked, Tim. Can't lose money. Okay. You know, spend it all. Hey, you've earned your success, pal. I've known you a long time, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Final topic. Yeah. Somebody who hasn't earned their success. I just had to read this one to you because it's too funny to not get the Murphy take on it.
Right.
Very serious story in the New York Times for a bunch of people who got kicked out of the Cash Patel FBI, talking about the ways that our country is less safe and the silliness of it. And how he's pushing out experts in favor of hacks, et cetera. There's one anecdote that really caught my eye. And this is from a top official at the FBI that has since been pushed out. Every May, there's a Five Eyes conference with the head of every intelligence agency. This year, it was going to be in the UK. Cash Patel was going to go. In the lead up to that, his detail starts making requests. He's got special requirements for everything. And the Brits are getting pissed. Before the conference, his staff says he's unhappy because he doesn't like meetings in office settings. He wants social events. Oh. He wants to do it at the premier soccer games. He wants to go jet skiing. He'd like a helicopter tour. Everyone who heard about this was like, hold on. He wants the MI5 director to meet on a jet ski. The schedule is set. He can come or not. His staff only cared about three things: what his meals were, what his workouts would be, and what his entertainment would be. That's the head of the FBI.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Beverly Hillbillies. I'm in the UK next week, and I'll see a Tory or two, and they're all just stunned. Like, you know, who are these cretins? And what they scream at you is, don't you understand? You cannot have bloody idiots running the USA. You know, you're the metronome beat. And right now, you got a chimpanzee banging it against the head. It screws up the world. So, yeah, the legacy of the Trump thing will be the worst staff people in the history of the American government. I mean, it is just incredible. And that's all this guy, I mean, there've been other stories about it. He hid in his plane for an hour because he couldn't find the right tough guy jacket to wear to some photo op. And he's got agents who ought to be like gang busting, chasing around to make sure his girlfriend gets a good seat at the, you know, the...
In this case, Windsor Castle.
Yeah.
That was the other sentence editor. The biggest plan, he wanted to make sure his girlfriend had a chance to go to the Windsor Castle while they were visiting.
Yeah, she'd really like to hang out with the Queen. She wants to sing. She's going to be a pop star. She's like some bad country star, right? So she'd really like to make the Queen sit through five bad renditions of Jolene or say, yeah, you know, it is a nightmare, but it will end.
The Queen is dead, so it'd be the King.
Well, now I know what killed her, that rendition.
Kate Middleton.
Yeah.
Or it's her hands. Right, I keep saying her hands did look a lot like Donald Trump's hands at Davos.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. I'm saying I just.
Let
I'm
the
not
dark
doctor,
web take it from here. You're just asking questions. You should do the Trump thing. You know, people are saying, I mean, I hear it all the time. They think it's blood cancer, brain worms. That's what they're saying. That's what people are talking about, the hands. The hands are a thing. I don't know. They're pretty bad, serious hands.
That's Mike Murphy. Every time we get him, it's just kind of like we're at the kingpin. He's at the corner. He's had two pops, you know, we're at the corner part of the bar, and he's just
drunk
letting loose, giving us the material. Yep. So we appreciate it. He's our resident Norm. That's Mike Murphy. Check him out on Hacks on
Tap.
And we'll see you guys soon. All right.
All right. Take care, Tim.
Thanks so much to Murph. Always appreciate him coming on. Hopefully he gave you a little bit of a laugh. We'll be back Monday. We do have some serious material to discuss next week. So we'll see you all then. Bill Kristol on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. Peace. Board podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
This is Jay Shetty from On Purpose with Jay Shetty. Push it, bend it, flex it. Introducing the latest rule-bending innovation from Brooks Running, the new Glycerin Flex. Feel the freedom with a cushioned shoe made to move with you so that you can bend or flex the rules. Brooks' new strategically segmented midsole works as an extension of your body, putting you in control of the run like never before. Want to feel the best parts of your run? Flex the rules in the new Glycerin Flex. Let's run there. Shop now at brooksrunning.com.
You ever wonder how far an EV can take you on one charge? Well, most people drive about 40 miles a day, which means you can do all daily stuff no problem. Go to work, grab the kids at school, get the groceries, and still have enough charge to visit your in-laws in the next county. But they don't need to know that. And the best part? You won't have to buy gas at all. The way forward is electric. Explore EVs that fit your life at electricforall.org.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.